You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Lay, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that is the music that tells us it is time to welcome Howard Parkin into the studio for this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night. Fastamai, Howard, and welcome.
Fastamai, Judith. It's great to be here again.
Well, good to welcome you back into the studio with what I'm sure is going to be another packed programme.
Oh, lots to talk about, as ever, lots of things to talk about. But firstly, I've just got to say thank you, a big, huge thank you to Harry Harrison, who got in touch with us after last month's show. I must apologise, I was having a go at photographers, and Harry quite rightly came back to me and said there are some stunning action shots you can take with the moon in the background and something in the foreground. And I was having a go at these people who do Photoshop stuff. Well, Harry doesn't. He sent me some of these images. They really are wonderful. Thank you for those, Harry. And even more so, thank you for the pictures you sent me, which I will make sure I put up on the wall of the observatory for everyone to see. I particularly love the colour one with the Tower of Refuge lit up in colour and the moon rising behind it. A lovely picture, and well done. And I don't mean to have upset you, but I hope you'll accept it. My apologies in the way it's meant.
And lovely that you've got these set of four pictures that will look... Having been up to the observatory, I know that they will look lovely up there. You've got plenty of scope.
I will certainly get them up there so next time I'm up there.
Excellent. Harry, thank you very much indeed. Now, what's first on the agenda tonight, Howard?
Well, the first thing on the agenda, I've got to say, Judith, is I've been doing my night school classes now for 6 weeks since we started them at the beginning of October. And I've been hoping for a clear night. And we got one last Tuesday. Wow, what a fantastic night. We all went up to the, it's not Conrennie. There's a bit of a mix-up with where the Dark Sky site is. The Dark Sky site is actually the car park near the stables there, the Douglas side or the Laxey side of Conrennie. That's the official Dark Sky place as far as I was concerned. And the sky was absolutely stunning. We stood there, we got there about 8:15, we were there till about 9:30. And, you know, it was absolutely breathtaking. I've seen some good nights from the island, obviously, over the years, but this was great. And the class were really enthusiastic about it. We saw Jupiter, we saw Saturn, we saw the Milky Way. I mean, one of the class, Liz, got out of the car and said, oh, there's the Milky Way. Now, we didn't even have to get our eyes used to the dark. It was just a fantastic night. And I've been hoping we'd get another one in the near future. But what I've always said, and I'll say it again, and I no doubt repeat myself loads of times, just put your head outside, have a look at the sky. Yes, it helps if you get your eyes used to the dark, but you just look up at the sky. And this time of the year in particular, the sky is spectacular over in the eastern side where the winter constellations are rising. I mention this usually every week, I think, every time I do the show. But the sky in the winter months is so spectacular. It's breathtaking. And lots of people say, wow, what's that? What's this? And just enjoy it.
I think that once you've seen a really exceptional sky, like the one you've just described, even if you don't see it that often, you know it's possible. You've seen it once. You carry that with you. And you know
it's anticipation of next time as well.
Yes. Yeah. But when we get long periods where the sky is quite indifferent and everything.
Inclement weather, I think we call it.
you can get a bit sort of down about it. But I'm sure that would give your students a real lift.
Well, it's taken us 6 weeks. I mean, from the first week, the first class was last Tuesday in September, right through until the sixth week of the class. I have done classes over the years when we've never got outside once, so I was really lucky, and it was such a good night. The worst of it is if you think it's going to be clear and you go outside and it's clouded over. That has happened to me a couple of times, but last week was just perfect, right through from when we started the class at 7 o'clock, hour in the classroom, and then up to the Conrennie. And we loved it. A bit cold, but hey, there's no such thing as cold weather. There's bad clothing. That's what you've got to make sure you've got. Decent clothing.
Wrong clothing. I noticed something this afternoon. It was about 3:30. And the reason I'm saying that is because I looked and I thought, wasn't what I would have expected to see in the sky at that time. So I looked and checked the time, and it was 3:30, and you could see the moon in the daylight sky, and it was so beautiful because you could see
not quite a half, wasn't it?
Not quite, but yes, it was more than half, and it was just beautiful. And you seem to be able to see so much detail in the moon just with the naked eye.
Oh, yes, you can. I mean, the whole point of the moon, it's only, I say only, 250,000 miles away, but it is after the sun, it's the brightest object in our sky. And, of course, when you get it in a twilight sky, it's going dark, it's quite beautiful. And obviously we've had the crescent moon, we've had the new moon, we're going through now to the full moon, which is in a few weeks' time, a few days' time, I think it is. Just looking it up, it's actually on the 4th. It's next Thursday. So we've gone past quarter now, we're on to full on the 4th. And of course, it's a supermoon. I know I mentioned supermoons.
You know, it's funny, ever since you've said that you shouldn't be saying supermoon and wimpy moon and all that, you do it all the time,
don't
you?
I do it all the time now, because if you can't beat them, join them. And I've just been doing some research on the skies for 2026. And we got 3 supermoons again. Next one's in January. So when we get to the end of December, I'll be talking about the next one. But no, if it makes people look at the sky, it makes people realise. What I always try to do, of course, is make people aware of the size of the moon and how it is really in size in comparison to what we see on the horizon and everything else. And the little fingernail trick covers the full moon is always a thing worth trying. Try it yourselves. Listeners, next Thursday, go outside, look at the beautiful full moon near the horizon, and you'll think, wow, that's a massive big full moon. Then cover it with your own little fingernail held at arm's length, and you'll realise it's not as big as you think. It's just it looks big because it's so bright in a dark sky against the landscape of whatever you're looking at, whether it's the hills, the mountains, or out at sea.
Right, let's have a look at Venus disappearing and Jupiter.
Yeah, Venus, we've lost Venus.
And Saturn.
Yeah, we've lost Venus. I was keep watching for Venus in the morning sky because we've had a few decent mornings, but it's gone now. It's. I think if you really try very hard, you can catch it just before sunrise. It's in the dawn sky. But, of course, it will be back. It will be back early part of next year. It'll be back in the evening sky, and it'll be quite dramatic and quite spectacular. And that's Venus for you. But in the evening sky at the moment, don't be misled or be upset about it, because we've got 2 very, very bright planets, very, very easy to see. I already mentioned these a moment ago. We can see the planet Jupiter nestled in the constellation of Gemini at the moment. Very easy to make out, because if you look towards the eastern sky, you've got the constellation of Orion rising in the east, and above left of it, you've got the stars of Castor and Pollux, the 2 stars of Gemini, and Jupiter is down below them and to the right. And what is interesting, and I don't normally get into astrological stuff as well, but what is interesting is Jupiter is actually tracking backwards. It's going through what we call retrograde motion at the moment. So if you look at Jupiter in the sky, you'll notice that it's to the right of the 2 stars, Castor and Pollux, that are directly above each other. Jupiter's going towards the west. And it will do this right through to the middle of March, and then it will start going forwards again. The phenomenon known as retrograde motion. And this was the biggest problem we had way back in the 16th century when they couldn't work out why planets went backwards. All sorts of weird and wonderful explanations for it. And it's all to do with the fact that the Earth is going around the Sun and Jupiter is going around the Sun at a much slower speed. It takes 12 years for Jupiter to go around the Sun compared to the Earth in 1 year. So what happens is the Earth catches up with Jupiter. So against a background of stars, Jupiter appears to go backwards for a period of time, about 3 months, and then it will recover itself and go back forwards again. So very easy to spot that for yourself. Just look for Jupiter, which, as I say, you can't miss it, with those 2 bright stars to the left, one above the other, Castor at the top, Pollux in the middle, and Jupiter down below moving towards the west, as I say, going backwards. The astrologers will have you say, oh, that's going to be a disaster and all sorts of things are going to happen. It's nothing to do with anything happening on the Earth. It's a line of sight effect, just like a racing car going around a racing track. They see from the distance to be going left and then right, and it's exactly the same with the planets. And we've also got in the sky, we've got the planet Saturn. Now, I've already mentioned looking towards the eastern sky and the big bright constellations of the winter months, which are all rising beautifully in the east. Turn your head now and look towards the west or the southwest, and you'll see a single star all on its own. that isn't a star, that's the planet Saturn. Very, very bright, very, very easy to see. And it's in a part of the sky where there's no other bright objects. Saturn at the Fortunes, if you get your binoculars or your telescope on it, you're going to say, well, Saturn's meant to have these beautiful rings round it. Well, it has, but the rings are edge on to us. They're edge on to us a few weeks ago, and they will slowly but surely tilt now. As Saturn goes around the Sun and we go around the Sun, the rings will slowly regain their tilt, and we'll start to see the rings. This time next year, the rings will be quite, I won't say easy to spot, but they'll be certainly noticeable in about 6 to 12 months' time. You won't see it in 6 months' time, of course, because it'll be around the back of the Sun. But next autumn and early winter next year, it'll be there again. And it'll have moved a bit further away from where it is now, so it'll be moving towards the brighter stars of the winter months, which we mentioned a moment ago, are really quite spectacular this time of the year.
Right. Well, spectacular this time of the year. I don't suppose you could find an aurora for us, could you, Howard? I was looking at my pictures from the first one, you know, the one that almost took us by surprise.
Well, October last year, yeah.
And I was looking at that and thinking it was the element of surprise, wasn't it?
Well, we did, unfortunately, Judith. I've got a sad tale to tell. Oh. We had another tremendous outburst of aurora on the 13th of November. Mm. And what was it like? Thick cloud. Mm. It was one of the most dramatic displays of aurora. Almost as good. We had two big, massive flares out of the Sun within quick succession of each other, and the material from the Sun actually impacted on the Earth's upper atmosphere, excited the atoms in the atmosphere to make the aurora. But it was cloudy, and the whole of the British Isles was clouded out. And although it was probably as dramatic as we had in October in 2024, I know somebody, one of my friends in Australia, sent me a picture of it from Sydney. Now, Sydney is at a latitude of 34 degrees. We're 54. A lot further from the pole than we are. And yet they saw it down there. And it really was good. And there's actually now a bit of excitement around, because the auroral peak, the 11-year cycle, which I've talked about on a number of occasions, the 11-year cycle, we're almost certain it peaked in May this year. May this year, or maybe October last year. We're not certain until we get the numbers of all the different sunspots, which is what we measure to give us the peak. But the peak we got in this November wasn't expected. It was another unexpected event. And there is a theory going around that it could possibly be we're getting a double peak. It isn't. It's rare, but it's not unusual, if that makes sense. And if we get a double peak, well, we could be getting some more dramatic auroras between now and certainly through next year as well, because if the peak was in May this year, even as it recedes away from the peak, we're likely to get more auroras. So keep your eyes and ears watching. There's a very good chance we might get some more auroras from the Isle of Man as well.
And there are these apps now on for smartphones, aren't there? The Aurora Watch.
Yeah, the Aurora Watch UK is a very good one, but the one I like using, it's one of the least complicated to use, is the Geophysical Institute in Alaska. Alaska GI, I think, is the email address. And they actually give you the KP index. And forget everything else I've told you. The higher the KP index, the better the aurora. It normally hovers around 2 and 3. We got up to 9 on the 13th of November and saw nothing.
Oh, that little disappointed voice.
Well, he was disappointed.
Let's move swiftly on. Comets, Lemon, Swan.
Yeah, Lemon and Swan. The two.
They don't know. Now, how have they got their names? Because they don't.
The Discoverers.
Right.
There's two separate comets there. I know, I appreciate I put the two together. Because we don't get many bright comets in our skies. And we had two in very quick succession. Comet Lemon, which was visible low in the Sun, in the western sky. I caught it a couple of times, and it wasn't that spectacular. It was in a light sky anyway, but it was nice to see. And Comet Swan I never saw this time, or any time. But I must talk about, and I'm sure some of the listeners will be saying, what about this comet? What's it about this spaceship that's coming through the solar system? It's a load of rubbish. It is a comet. There is a comet, what we call an interstellar comet, Comet 3I Atlas. Comet 3I Atlas has come from outside of our solar system. We now have the ability with telescopes and equipment to detect these things. It's the third one we've detected now. But this one is the far side of the Sun. And because it's the far side of the Sun, observing it has been very difficult. And added to that, the US had a government shutdown, so NASA weren't able to publish anything or say anything about it. So that got all the conspiracy people saying it's an alien spaceship and it's going to rendezvous with Jupiter, then it's going to come to Earth. And there's so much rubbish out there, there's no other word for it, saying that this object is of alien origin. It's a comet. It's portraying all the things that comets portray. We are able to detect things within it. We're able to detect the outgassing from it. And we've detected water compounds, which is exciting because we believe comets brought the water to Earth all those centuries ago. We've also detected things like nickel, heavy elements like nickel, which we think originate also in the centre of these sort of objects that are left over from the origins of wherever they came from. But it isn't a spaceship. And I'm sorry to disappoint people, but there's that much stuff on the internet. If you look on Facebook or something like that, they'll tell you everything, how they're signalling to us and all sorts of stuff. But it's not the case. It's a fascinating object. It's come from outside of our solar system. It's, unfortunately, it's the other side of the sun. But we've even got spacecraft on Mars looking at it. And we've got spacecraft on Mars measuring it and looking at it and all sorts of stuff. So it's not a spaceship as such. It's an interstellar comet. It's going to be flung out of our solar system again. And who knows when we'll detect the next one. We've detected three now in about 5-6 years. So hopefully we'll catch another one. And maybe the next one will be a bit close to Earth and we can get even more examination of it.
Mars has been back in the news this week, hasn't it? Just in the last couple of days. Something that they're describing it as possibly lightning. I mean, it's as you say with all of these stories, it could be this, it could be that, it might be that. It's just more that information that the rover has sent.
And we're gathering more and more information. And the beauty of science, in any aspect of science, I talk generally about science now, the whole point is we try to learn something. We observe something in the science we're studying, and then we discover things we didn't expect. And for every question we think we're going to get an answer to, there's another 10 questions get asked as a consequence. You shouldn't get lightning on Mars, but what we're thinking, first thing I said to you when we were talking about this was, you haven't got a thick atmosphere to generate lightning. What they're saying is when they have dust storms on Mars, storms on Mars, and the principle of lightning, for those who realise it, lightning is a natural phenomenon where strong up drafts and downdrafts affect the atoms and give them a charge, and those charges have to ground, and that's where you get lightning. We're not going to say we're going to see massive flashes of lightning on Mars, but we've detected them from the observations of the two rovers, in particular Perseverance and Curiosity. And although there's no pictures of lightning bolts on Mars yet, there probably won't be, but it's something else that we can learn to understand the atmosphere of Mars, and hopefully when we get there sometime, and then hopefully not too distant future, we'll be more aware of what can happen and be prepared for it.
Yeah, and I think the point that they were making was that this is, lightning was a bit of a sweeping statement. They said it was some traces of electrical activity, which could have meant that something else, that there was a presence of water and other things, billions of years ago. So, well, as you say, this is what makes it fascinating.
Exactly, and there's so much aspects of it. It's the fastest, as we joke about, always have something to talk about, because I'll sit at home yesterday or Friday, whenever it was, and start to make a list of what we're going to talk about, Judith, as you know, and the list just gets longer and longer. I've actually got 5 items to talk about, which we hadn't even thought about when I sent you the list yesterday.
Well, there we go. We'd better play some music while you decide which of them are very, very important now.
And this is a special song, this one. This was a song given to me by, or someone told me about this song, and you need to listen to the lyrics. It's a wonderful song, and I'll let you hear for it, and you can hear it yourselves.
It's Mary Chapin Carpenter and Hallie Came to Jackson.
Daddy brought the baby to the windowsill to see a bit of heaven shoot across the sky. The one and only time Daddy saw it fly. It came from the east just as bright as a torch. The neighbors had a party on their porch. Daddy rocked the baby, mother said amen, when Hallie came to visit in 1910. Thank you. Jackson was a real small town. And it's not every night a comet comes around. It was almost 80 years since its last time through. So I bet your mother would have said amen too. As its tail stretched out like a stardust streak, the papers wrote about it every day for a week. You wondered where it's going and where it's been when Halley came to Jackson in 1910. Daddy told the baby sleeping in his arms to dream a little dream of a comet's charms. And he made a little wish as she slept so sound. In 1986 that a wish came round. It came from the east just as bright as a torch. She saw it in the sky from her daddy's porch. Heavenly sent as it was back then, when Halley came to Jackson in 1910. Late one night when the wind was still,
when Halley came to Jackson in 1910 by Mary Chapin Carpenter, Howard's music choice for us. And you are listening to this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night here on Manx Radio with, of course, our special guest presenter, Howard Parkin. Tell me the story of the song. Is it celebrating the actual...
It is true. The comet was seen in 1910. And I don't know if it's a true story about the girl who wrote the song or sang the song, but basically, Halley's Comet was seen in 1910, obviously from all over the world, and she is saying it was seen in Jackson. She was the baby in her daddy's arms that saw the comet. And of course, in 1986, when it came back round, she showed her own daughter the comet. It wasn't very good in 1986. It was very faint. It was the wrong side of the sun again, a bit like a Comet Atlas we were talking about. But in 1910, it was quite spectacular. It was a lot nearer to us. And you haven't got to wait long. The next time it comes round is 2061.
Right, okay, fine.
Moving on swiftly.
I like your optimism, your optimism, Howard. Right, well, what we generally do in this part of the programme is to take a look at the world of space, and there's always something going on, but something that that you've flagged up that I'm fascinated to know more about is the Chinese stranded in orbit.
Yes, I'd cater for the media again on this one. Just like last year when the Starship rocket went up and the two American astronauts couldn't come back because the Starship wasn't fitted. That Starship, the Starliner, Boeing Starliner, couldn't bring them back, so it came back unmanned. In a similar way, the Chinese sent their new mission up to the Tiangong space station a few weeks ago, but the return capsule that they were meant to come back in had a problem. They think it was hit by a meteorite, and they were worried about the quality of the spacecraft, whether it was safe to bring them back. So the Chinese took a decision to leave them up there, and they sent an unmanned rocket up only last week, I think it was, to bring them back. This has got people all speculating, oh dear, they're stranded in orbit, just like Butch Wilmore and Sonny, forgotten a surname now, were stranded last year. It isn't. These things are very carefully done, and they don't take risks unnecessarily. And if they don't think something is right, they will wait on the space station, whichever one it might be, and bring them back as and when it's appropriate. So they won't be there as long as Butch and Sonny were, but they will be coming back probably in the next week or so. They've had to stay a bit longer, about a month. So instead of having just three people on the space station, they've got six. So it'll be a bit cosy up there, I'd imagine. But they've always got spacecraft that can bring them back in. And obviously, if the one was damaged, then obviously, I suppose if all else failed, they would use it. But that's why they've been very cautious and they brought one back. And they'll detach the other one and probably bring it back unmanned and then examine it and see what the problem was, see if they can avoid a similar situation occurring again. But it's made the space industry realise maybe there is something we should be doing about having a rocket on a launch pad ready to go and rescue people who might have this problem. And it's something that's been conjecture, and it makes a bit of sense, a bit of an international rescue, if you like. But the thing is, you can't just suddenly say, right, let's go up and get them. You've got to get the rockets ready. You've got to get the rockets ready. You've got them getting repaired and fueled and the crew and everything else. So maybe that's something they should be looking at. And it's all part of the international cooperation and the fact that, you know, we're moving into space as a far bigger industry now. And it's becoming, I would say, commonplace. Not commonplace yet, but it's certainly something that's being looked at in more and more detail.
Well, if they are going to increase activity, and we're always saying how much they are doing and how many things are going on up there, if they are determined to keep on doing that, they are going to have some kind of a rescue plan. Sort of, you know, space equivalent of an ambulance or the emergency services.
It just needs a rocket either in China or Russia or America on the pad ready to go in the event of a problem. It would probably take 2 or 3 days to get one ready at the minimum. When the shuttle was flying after the Columbia disaster, they always had a rescue shuttle ready to launch in the event they had a problem with the shuttle. So it ain't rocket science. Bubble. That wasn't a pun. I just came out, sorry. It is something that could be, with a bit of cooperation, they could certainly arrange something and hope they don't use it, but at least they'd have the opportunity if they needed it.
They need to kind of think this through, yeah. out of the other stories that you've got lined up, and there's loads of stories lined up, which do you think are the most important ones at the moment, Howard?
Well, the one that surprised me was the Escapade launch. The Escapade launches, two spacecraft were launched to Mars only a few weeks ago. These two very small spacecraft, one's called Blue, one's called Gold. They're going to go to Mars, and they're going to go to Mars and approach Mars from a different altitude, with the higher one and the lower one. They're basically measuring the Martian atmosphere. That's what they're doing. Now, any space nut will tell you can only launch to Mars literally every 2 years. When Mars goes through near opposition, you can't go to Mars when you like. You've got to wait until the orbits are aligned. This spacecraft was meant to be launched about a year ago when the orbits were aligned to go straight to Mars, but they weren't ready. The spacecraft wasn't ready. It was launched on the new rocket, the new Glenn rocket, by Jeff Bezos's Blue Origins company. But they've launched it into what we call a loiter orbit, which I'd never heard of. Basically, there are some places around the Earth which are gravitationally stable, and these gravitationally stable places is where you put spacecraft like the James Webb telescope, like the Gaia spacecraft and other spacecraft, where they are gravitationally bound to that point, which is in a balance between the Sun, the Earth and the Moon. That's the boring bit. But what they've done, they've sent this spacecraft out to this position, and then it's a million miles away. It's going to come all the way out there and all the way back again. It's going to do this twice. And by the time it's done it twice, Mars and the Earth will be aligned and off it'll go to Mars. So it's loitering in orbit, if you like, until they're ready. It makes sense because the spacecraft on the Earth, it's prone to having problems with it or whatever. But once you've got a spacecraft up in space, nothing's going to affect it. Not a meteoroid hit, probably, but that's very unlikely. As we've talked about, that's the first instance we've had of a manned mission there being possible to have a meteoroid impact, I think, ever. But this spacecraft, these two spacecraft, are in this loiter orbit, and they're going to come back to the Earth. And what they're going to do with them, they didn't have to put loads of fuel on board because they're going to use the Earth's gravity to sling them out to Mars. So not only is it's gone early, or it's gone early before the alignment of Mars and the Earth, but it's going to get a slingshot from the Earth so it can get to Mars with less fuel or engines or anything, and therefore it can carry a greater payload to do the science and experiments they want to do there. Fascinating subject. And if you look up the loiter orbit of Escapade, it's looked like one of the spirographed images you see.
I remember ages ago you explained about this idea of when something has gone beyond a certain distance away from the Earth and out into space, mm-hmm. it almost goes without fuel because it works on the gravitational pulls or the forces.
You use the gravity of the Earth or the planet or other object.
Yes, to pull it along. But this idea of things actually loitering about in the air is mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. I didn't know anything about it. I remember thinking to myself, how on earth can they launch to Mars when it should have gone last year? It should have gone October last year. It's gone October this year. And then I looked it up and I saw the orbit and I thought, well, how does that work? And then I realised it's all to do with what we call the Lagrange points. And these are the gravitationally stable points where you can put spacecraft where they won't need much fuel to stay in that position to do the science and do the work.
Amazing. Right. New NASA administrator? Jared Isaacman, what do you think?
It's going to be announced, hopefully, on Thursday.
Yeah.
President Trump nominated Jared Isaacman, who's the Artemis, I forgot the name of this company now. It's gone out of my head. Anyway, he's going to launch. He has launched space. He's been in space himself a couple of times. He did a spacewalk. And he's going to go, or he was nominated as the NASA administrator, and then the President Trump withdrew the nomination. Well, now he's changed his mind, surprise, surprise, and has now renominated Jared Isaacman, and it's got to be approved by Congress, and they had the hearing last week or week before, and they're going to make a final decision this Thursday. So I would imagine he will get nominated that. He's a great bloke to do it, because he's just the sort of chap who will bring NASA along, and hopefully with a business sense as well as the idea of going into space. It should be a good appointment, but it's got to be confirmed by Congress at the moment.
You've got 30 seconds, Howard. What's the most important thing you want to tell us in 30 seconds?
In 30 seconds, Artemis 3, which is the spacecraft which is going to return Americans to the moon, has now been put back till 2027. And there's speculation that the crew will be named after the Artemis 2 mission, which is February next year. Amongst the names being bandied around as possibly going to be on that mission is Steve Bowen. And Steve Bowen was one of the astronauts who came to the Isle of Man. He was part of Nicole's crew, STS-33 Discovery mission that came to the Isle of Man in 2012. And he's a very experienced astronaut. And who knows, maybe he's been in the Isle of Man and now he's going to go to the moon.
Which would be pretty exciting, wouldn't it?
It certainly would.
That was certainly a great story to finish with. Howard, are you going to come back the last Sunday in December?
I most certainly am. It's the 29th, I think, so we're well away from the New Year festivities.
28th I think it is.
Oh, yes, I'll be here. Lots to talk about for the New Year.
I was just going to say, it will be lovely to have you here to preview all the things that we might be looking at in our 2026 beautiful dark skies.
And I can just tell you very quickly of one of them. On June 3rd next year, Jupiter and Venus, the brightest planets, are both going to be next to each other in the western sky over Peel. Just in the middle of TT. I've arranged it specially.
And that is how very thoughtful of you. And that's just one of the things we'll be talking about when Howard comes back in the studio on the final Sunday night of December. In the meantime, Howard, I know it's a bit early, but I wish you and Mrs. Parkin a very happy Christmas.
And the same to you and all the listeners. Thank you very much indeed.
That's to my Howard. Station.